Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We're broadcasting live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. JanPro. From showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. So, amidst all of the concern about the loss last night and some of Tockett's commentary and going back over what Alvin had to say and all of that, the Canucks are trying to make the playoffs. They have 19 games remaining, and I think it's worth just taking a minute here to kind of look ahead to the week and realize and emphasize how high stakes this week of action is for the Vancouver Canucks. They've got Montreal tomorrow, Calgary on Wednesday in Calgary, and then home against Chicago on Saturday, home against Utah on Sunday. So a home back-to-back. So you have two games against teams well out of the playoff race, including, would you say, the worst team in the league, Chicago, pretty clearly?
Yeah, on a serious PDO bender of late.
Yes.
And doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
They can do a couple things well.
Okay, but Montreal well back in the playoff race.
They're also going to play Lev Shunov tonight, their second overall pick against the Avalanche, so we might have a chance to see him later on this week in Vancouver. Obviously a giant mobile young defenseman.
So two home games against teams not in playoff contention. Yeah,
well,
sure. But it's still, like, it's not going to turn them into a playoff team all of a sudden.
No, but the Blackhawks penalty kill is really good. They have enough Jason Dickinson, Ilya Mikheyev, that young Nazar kid, who are, like, pretty good defensively and play with at least a little bit of dog in them. And while they're definitely on a bit of a percentage-driven sort of bender here, they also, you know, added Spencer Knight at the deadline, and Knight has played really well and is technically just about a perfect netminder. Gives them some ceiling to upset you night to night. So I think more than anything, what I'm saying is, don't chalk up two freebies.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's really important to beat them.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying.
No,
like,
kidding.
It's like you're looking at this. You're going into this week and looking at those games and saying those are huge opportunities.
Montreal too.
That's what I mean. Whew. Those games are huge opportunities, especially because the other two games are against your playoff rivals, right? So you look at it, like, you can make a case for all of these games being really, really big in the sense against Montreal and Chicago that you think you desperately need to find a way to get 2 points against those teams. And then, of course, Calgary and Utah, those are huge games. Like, those are, we're now at the point of the calendar where these are the types of games that could end up deciding who ends up making the playoffs. And you start to break it down. So I'll just go through the four teams, I would say, really contending for this final wild card spot here. Calgary with 70 points in 63 games. The Canucks, 69 and 63. St. Louis, 69 and 65. Utah, 66 in 63. So Calgary is on pace. The best of those teams is on pace for 91 points right now. How many points at the end of this, when all is said and done, and we're taking stock, how many points do you think the second wild card team will end up with? Do you think will anyone get to 93, 94?
Well, so you have to do really well at this point, right? I mean, if the Canucks were to just go 500,
yeah,
point percentage, not actual 500, because actual 500 yes. would be well above 500 point percentage. The Canucks, if they were to do that, they'd
have 88 points,
yeah, right? And that's basically true across the board. I expect one of these teams to do something wild, to do like 14.
To really get hot.
Yeah. I expect somebody to do it, because that's usually how these work. Usually it's not a turtle derby. Usually one team figures it out. One star player gets smoking hot, one crazy goaltending run. Usually you get something pretty dramatic to decide these. In my experience watching hockey across the last 15 years. So
are you saying, like, let's say 94 points? You think the winner gets to 94 points?
Yeah, I mean, 93, I think, is where we should set the bar.
Okay.
Based on, since the NHL adopted this format, 93.2 points is the historic playoff bar. in the Western Conference. So 93.2, I think we should assume 93. 92, 93, I think, is what we're looking at.
Yeah, 92 was kind of the number I was looking at, but 93. And so you can use that. You know, these teams got a lot of work to do, right? Like, to be the team that gets to that bar, this somebody is, in fact, going to have to get hot. Somebody's going to have to play above the level they've established already this year for themselves. So let's say to 93, that's 24 points in the final 19 games for the Canucks. So that's, you're looking at 11 wins and then a couple overtime losses, or 12, like 12 and 7 or 11, 5 and 2. That's a really nice run.
You're looking at a 99 to 100 point pace.
Yeah.
Over the balance of the season.
Yeah. When you've been at a 89 type pace or a 90 type pace. So you've got to significantly increase your level. Utah, to get to 93, would need 27 in their final 19. So they got to get really, really hot if they're going to get to that bar. St. Louis needs 24 in 17. That's pretty tough as well for them. So you're right. Like, I do expect ultimately some team will get it done and will find a way to get that hot and get to that number. But you're also at the point of the season where you can start kind of going through and like doing what people do with the NFL schedule before the season. You know what I mean? I mean, we're one more game than an NFL, or two more games than an NFL regular season here left for the Canucks, where you're like trying to count the wins and losses based on opponent. And everyone who's doing that for the Canucks right now is chalking up wins against Montreal and against Chicago this week. And if you don't get those wins, then all of a sudden you're looking at, okay, well, now we got to scrounge, you know, 11 wins out of the remaining 17 games, a lot of whom are against, or a lot of which are against better opposition than Montreal and Chicago. So it's that time of year now where you got to really take advantage of the lesser teams that you have on your schedule, because if not, trying to find those wins on your schedule gets very, very difficult.
For what it's worth, the Canucks have the strength of opponent remaining for the Canucks is 0.556 point percentage based on what they've done to this point in the season. That includes two games left against Winnipeg, two games left against the Vegas Golden Knights, one against the Stars, one against the Avalanche. Those are the highlights. They do, however, have a game against the Sharks left, a game against the Blackhawks left, a game against Seattle left, a game against Anaheim left, and a game against, I guess, the New York Islanders, if you want to call them. But I would sort of not categorize them with the other four. You got to win. Like, you got to go 7 of 8 against the Ducks, the Kraken, the Blackhawks, and the Sharks. Like, that's non-negotiable, and then you've got to hold serve Calgary Flames style against your tough opponents. For what it's worth, the Calgary Flames, 548 remaining point percentage teams. They have two left against the Sharks, which is pretty cozy. One against the Kraken, two against the Ducks, and they face the Rangers, so chalk up 2 points for them there. They do, however, face the Golden Knights twice and the Avs twice. They also have Kings, Oilers, and Stars left on their schedule. Utah, 545. Now, here's what's interesting. The St. Louis Blues, easiest remaining strength of schedule in the entire NHL.
Ooh.
518. Three against Nashville left. One against Chicago, one against Anaheim, one against the Kraken, two against Pittsburgh. So the St. Louis Blues.
That's interesting.
Have the easiest schedule left among these Stryver class teams. I think they have the least juice among the four.
We should point out also the Canucks play St. Louis next week in St. Louis.
Right.
So big game there as well.
Sure.
It is. Of course it is.
There's no world where a March game between the St. Louis Blues and the Vancouver Canucks in this year of our Lord 2025 is a big game.
It's just definitionally correct. It's a 4-point game.
It's disgusting.
obviously there's going to be a lot of hype for the Calgary game, and that is a massive game.
Anyone calling that a big game, though, honestly needs to go to jail. Like, should be tried.
I'd like to see you try.
Convicted and arrested. Incarcerated.
Why do you not think it's a big game? They're trying to make the playoffs.
Oh, it's like the Tostitos Hopelessness Bowl. My God. It is so nasty.
So give me your of the upcoming schedule for the Canucks, your big game power rankings, because they play Utah is one.
I mean,
well, the thing with Utah is they don't actually need to win that game, Utah, but pretty close. Like, if that's a regulation win for the Canucks, Utah is in serious, serious trouble, right? Like, that's almost a stake for their season.
Especially with Vancouver on the second leg of a back-to-back, it's not must-win, but it's pretty close.
It's extremely close. Yeah. So that, I agree.
That's a massive leverage swing,
especially
from their perspective.
Because they have the most work left to do. They have the lowest points percentage right now. Like, if you don't pick up the 2 points in that as Utah, like, you're getting into miracle territory for them pretty quick.
Yeah. So I would rate that one first because I also think Utah is just materially better than Calgary.
Yeah.
And Vancouver, but definitely than Calgary. And then I think the Calgary game comes second. So the Canucks' two biggest games this week come on the second legs of back-to-backs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that Montreal team's dangerous. We've kind of seen that, you know, from them. Like, they beat the Canucks in Montreal earlier this year, right? Do I remember that correctly? Or did the Canucks win that?
No.
It was such a miserable road trip that I swear they did.
What did happen in that game? It went to overtime, I believe.
Yeah, I think they won. I think the Utah Hockey Club won that game.
You mean the Canucks?
Sorry, the Montreal Canadiens is what I meant.
How did Utah win that game?
Trying to think back to that road trip, because that was the one where they lose. They won in Toronto to kind of salvage it.
Yeah.
So in my head, they lost. Yeah, they lost in OT, 5-4. So anyway, that game, that's a dangerous opponent. Chicago, I think, is not a dangerous opponent, but it's a game that could be annoying for the Canucks, especially, you know that you're going to get Bedard's best game and probably the best possible game from his teammates too.
You hope so.
You know? So I think those are two like sneaky, dangerous ones, even though they're games that the Canucks will be favored in on the betting line. And then playing the second leg of back-to-backs, especially with the travel in Calgary. Traveling to Calgary and then having to play that max effort team just seems so annoying.
And I do think it's a big game no matter what. It's a huge game no matter what. But depending on what they do against Montreal, it is also really going to color how we see it. Because if you win against Montreal, you pick up 2 points, okay? You're going to go in with 71 points in 64 games. So it'll basically be dead heat. Like, Calgary might be a hair ahead of you in points percentage, but it'll basically be dead even. Assuming it's a regulation win, you'll even have the tiebreaker with them at 24. So even if you lose to Calgary then, you're not feeling like you're dead in the water. It's tough. It's a bummer, but you're like, okay, hey, we're 1 point back. They have a game in hand. It's not ideal, but it's a manageable situation still. If you lose against Montreal, then all of a sudden the stakes of that Calgary game ramp up a lot, because then you're looking at going, you know, 3 points down and they have a game in hand, and all of a sudden the margin starts to get really significant. So that Montreal game becomes very, very significant, and this is a good text in that we just got. Unsigned. So I guess we're assuming Shelovs gets Montreal and Chicago this week. Well, I don't know about Chicago, but that's why one of
Shelovs wasn't even backing up yesterday.
It was Nikita Tolopilo.
I'm telling you right now. So they didn't practice today. Thatcher Demko has not practiced with the group yet. You usually expect to see a guy practice twice before making their return.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks are very quickly running out of runway for that to happen. Now, you could practice on Friday, assuming you're going to have a day off Thursday following the back-to-backs.
Yep.
So you take that day off, you practice Friday, you morning skate Friday, or sorry, Saturday. You morning skate Saturday. Could he be an option Sunday? Maybe. I am curious about how much of the dynamic here, too, is influenced by the Lankanen extension. This is not anything I know beyond reading the language of contracts and, mm-hmm. and the political dynamics that I've seen unfold in NHL locker rooms. You sign another goaltender to that sort of deal, ostensibly a guy's backup, that does change the dynamic. It's like drafting a quarterback in the first round when you have an established starter. It's like, well, what does that mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
Does that impact how quickly a guy wants to rush back, especially when they become extension eligible in July, especially when they need to be mindful of their own future? I'm not saying you like or accusing anybody of anything, but it's like if it's my team at 95%, am I pushing to get back? And if it's, hey, I got to look out for myself, do I make sure that I'm at 100%? Like, make damn sure,
mm-hmm.
because I've got my own future to worry about. Those are the sorts of calculations that can shift as a result of decisions that teams make. I don't know if that's going on, but I do sort of wonder if there's a dynamic or an element of that that might influence exactly when Demko gets back. My guess is we're going to see Lankanen play back to back this week.
So it's going to in like Montreal and then on the road in Calgary, back to back.
That is I'm not going to handicap it for the weekend, but my guess is
that's also 3-4.
Here's the thing. It is, but here's the thing. When you have a goaltender who is that much more reliable
mm-hmm.
than the other options, you know, like even if you're saying like he's going to lose 0.010 or 0.015 off his save percentage or off what we expect of his save percentage going back to back, going tired, he's still better. You can still count on that far more than you can count on Shelov's at the moment.
Yeah, or Tolopilo's never played. Who's never played an NHL game.
And hasn't been good in the American League. It's not like he's been a 930 guy in the American League this year. So, I don't know, man. I don't see any way around this. Like, how do you go into that room if you're Tocchet, if you're Marco Terenius, if you're Rutherford, if you're Alvin, and say, these games matter to us. We're not going to start Lankanen back-to-back. Like, you have to.
Yeah, especially after the deadline, right?
You have to.
You're like, oh, no, we are all in.
Instead, you go in and you say, guys, we're going to give you your best chance of making the playoffs. Lankanen's going to play back-to-back, so yeah. You better make sure he only faces 35 shot attempts tonight.
By the way, credit to Tatiana and Langley. She points out that we were wrong. I think Shelov's did end up backing up yesterday. Tolopilo came up at some point, but anyways, the point is Tolopilo has been up recently, and Shelov's has been down to Abbotsford.
Point is,
backed up.
Yeah, he's... Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw it out there.
Excuse me.
No, and I think you're probably ultimately right. Look, we take accountability seriously here, Drance.
100%.
Sometimes.
My bad.
You're probably right from an optics standpoint and what you're selling to the team and all of that, and especially after you keep your guys, you know, you're clearly prioritizing making the playoffs to a certain degree. You got to give the team the best chance to win. But it's one of these situations where even just beyond these two games, that will be a lot of work for Kevin Lankanen. As I said, that's 3-4, 4-6, 5-8. You're going into another set of back-to-back games on the weekend. Now, you hope that maybe Thatcher Demko is an option for one of those. But yes, you need Kevin Lankanen, ideally, to give you the best chance to win in Calgary. And you probably don't trust Shelov's enough to get him any game that's a big game, even against Montreal this week. But you also need Kevin Lankanen to be at a certain level for the remaining, you know, 15 games after this week on the schedule, if you're going to outlast these teams and make a push to the playoffs. I don't know if that justifies starting a guy you don't have a lot of confidence in one of these back-to-backs, but it absolutely has to be part of the equation. Now, Lankanen was really, really good against Minnesota, and I know, you know, he pushes out that rebound for the 2-1 goal against Dallas, but I thought he was fine against Dallas as well. There was a little bit of time there where maybe there was some slippage in his play, maybe due to workload. It's just something you have to monitor, and it's another very, very difficult situation here for the Canucks with the way the schedule shakes out. Having, instead of, you know, it'd be one thing if it was Montreal on Tuesday, Calgary Thursday, then you're back home. But having the back-to-back with travel in there, albeit only to Calgary, it makes for an interesting choice and an interesting dilemma for the Canucks as they try to squeeze out as many points as they can this week as they continue to try to push for the playoffs. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get your thoughts in. So you're not giving up the ghost on Utah. You still believe in Utah making the playoffs.
What? They got 3 points out of a back-to-back set?
I know. It's just they have the worst points percentage.
Yeah, but by what?
Like it's, not much.
It's minuscule.
Compared to, they're just behind St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost 17 one-goal games this season. That leads the NHL by a wide margin. They've just, like, had a really unfortunate distribution of sort of games in which they've been narrowly beat. That flips. That's not, like,
set in stone.
Well, it's something, it does say something, I think, about their inexperience. Like, that does happen to inexperienced teams. You kind of saw it, that Columbus second period was a perfect example where they're, like, absolutely kicking the New York Rangers' teeth in, but then they have this blip shorthanded and let the Rangers briefly back into the game. Like, that does happen to younger teams,
mm-hmm.
right? So they've got some of that, but I feel like they've gone through that. They've taken those hits now. I just think they've got more juice. Like, they attack more dynamically. Their defense is finally intact and relatively healthy. Losing Connor Ingram hurts. Going to be a lot on Vejmelka here, but yeah, and obviously Ingram entered the NHLPA program, and so wishing him the best is not, they didn't lose him. He's taking care of himself, and best of luck to that fine gentleman with the killer Twitter account. I think he's also a really good player. Anyway, I watch that team play, and I love the way they play. Their third line is incredible. Like, their third line is what I think in future years, something like a Drew O'Connor, you get the right center in place. Mm-hmm. They have that 6'5" beast McBain in the middle with Krause and Josh Doan. It's like, at some point, if you're ever able to play Drew O'Connor with Dakota Joshua and you find the right big-bodied
center,
I think that's what you could have kind of there. And it's like, I will love that line.
That's awesome.
I will love that line.
Yeah.
And then obviously Gunther and Cooley and on and on. They're just so fast.
I don't disagree with you about the talent and the offensive ability there. It's just they are in a position where they've got a lot of work to do to get to 92 points. That's my only
sure.
point. You know what I mean? And it's the kind of thing where a couple bad breaks, then all of a sudden you're looking at like, oh, now you have to play 750 hockey over your final 17 games or something.
But that's
right?
True for all of these teams.
Yep.
You know, like that's the boat they're in. Let me quickly, I know we're on the clock for, we don't have any guests. We're fine, right?
Yeah, I mean, we should break fairly soon.
We have longer breaks now, Tom.
I also treat the top of the hour break with more respect than I do the middle one. The middle one, I don't care about. The top of the hour one, I try to respect.
Okay, well, just give me 2 seconds to pull up a stat and then let us go, okay? Deal?
It's a deal.
Thank you. If you look at it since the Four Nations break, okay? All NHL teams since the Four Nations break. Then this is why I can't quit the Utah Hockey Club. Mm-hmm. The Utah Hockey Club has a 56% control of shot attempts. The only teams better in hockey in that span: Carolina, Florida, Colorado. They've outscored the opposition by a wide margin, by a matching margin, 14-10. And they've done that without a bounce, like 100 people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's just a totally, for to put that into sort of context, for the Calgary Flames, they're at 47.3%. They've been outscored 5-on-5 in that time frame, 11-12. The Canucks, 48.4%. They've been outscored by 8, 5-on-5 in that period of time. And the St. Louis Blues have somehow scored 25 5-on-5 goals since the Four Nations break, but they're shooting 12.5%. So I would sell.
Don't count out the Blues.
Sell on this Blues glow up. That is just completely bonkers luck that they're on. This is an insane run of scoring juice that does not reflect who they really are. They're also sub 50%. That's a huge gap in the quality of a team's ability to control play 5-on-5. I'm always going to side with the team that doesn't need a run of 13% shooting to outscore their opponents.
All right. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. More Canucks talk on the other side on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can send your texts in. No practice for the Canucks today. They had an optional workout. I believe the players, or at least Jake DeBrusk, has met with the media. We'll see if we get some Rick Tocchet audio in here before the end of the show. And, you know, more importantly, see if we get any further clarification or information on timelines for Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko as well this week. I want to dive into the inbox.
Getting Hughes back would be massive.
Yeah, you don't say.
Oh,
that would be a pretty big deal. They desperately, desperately need a game breaker in the lineup. I want to dive into the inbox here and just touch on this one. Now, it's a little bit of ground we covered on Friday, not in any great depth. We didn't have a ton of time after Alvin's presser, but you know, a lot of texts are along these lines or questions along this. So this one's unsigned. I don't understand why Alvin said what he said about Besser in the way that he did. Like, if they're thinking of re-signing Besser, if they're wanting to trade him, why wouldn't he frame it more in a, well, Besser is an important part of the team and the offers we were getting weren't worth what Besser is to us. Obviously, they didn't get what they wanted for him, or they probably would have traded him, but why make it so sour for everyone involved on a team where the locker room is probably not all that great to begin with? Of course, the texter here is talking about the, if I told you what the offers were for Brock Besser, I'd have to run out of the room because you guys wouldn't believe me. And I've seen some debate about how insulting this actually is to the player. More than insulting, it just kind of came off a little flippant to me. You know what I mean? Having said that, and you were kind of describing, you know, the inherent emotion and stress of the trade deadline. Alvin was speaking at what, 12:30? Half an hour after the deadline had passed. So I imagine there's an element of frustration there as well, right?
Yep.
And I think that more than a shot at Besser, I think that's what it was. It was frustration bubbling over a little bit that they didn't get the offers they wanted for Besser, that they weren't able to do more and be more active at the trade deadline. And that includes, by the way, and I said this on Friday, like, the frustration is not just that they weren't able to get a first round pick for Besser, it's that they weren't able to be active. They weren't able to sell, but then also add some interesting pieces for the future. You know what I mean? Which kind of would have been the ideal trade deadline, I think, for the Canucks. But anyways, the whole conversation with the commentary around Besser, I am very interested now to see where things go with Brock Besser, right? Rick Dhaliwal reported today, and I think this, I don't want to step on your toes if you've had this one already, but I'm very aware of that now, but that the Canucks made Besser a new contract offer like sometime before the deadline, sometime last week before the deadline, and then again Friday morning, didn't come close. We hear that they're still going to try to re-sign him. They're going to make him more offers. But it is this interesting position where you didn't get the value you wanted. Does that mean you value the player more than the team or than the rest of the league? But if that was the case, you'd think there'd be more of a willingness to step up and meet his demands to keep him here before the deadline. So is it that Besser's value is just actually a lot lower than maybe we on the outside thought, and the Canucks and the rest of the league recognize that? Or is it a case of simply, you know, because the thing is, you can say, well, if he didn't get a first round pick, who's going to give him a big contract? A rebuilding or a team not in the playoff race isn't going to be interested in trading a first round pick at the deadline for Brock Besser, but they might be interested in signing him. So the market could, like, the market for him as a free agent is different than the market for him as a rental.
Correct.
At the trade deadline. So I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind here. But it has added just a whole layer of uncertainty and intrigue, I think, into where this goes. Where do things stand between Besser and the Canucks? What is his market out there? And what are the chances of him actually signing a new contract with this team?
So I think there's a lot of different things to discuss here. I would have liked, personally, to see Alvin defend the team a little more in framing the club's actions.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that would have been, I just think it's a missed opportunity to be like, we weren't going to sell low given that we believe that this is a playoff team. I would have liked to see that be front and center as opposed to we couldn't get value. Just, that's my view of it. That said, what was said, okay? I think you can understand why the club would be frustrated with Brock Besser. I think you can understand why the club would be frustrated with Elias Pettersson.
Oh, boy, can I?
I think you could understand why the club would be frustrated with Jake DeBrusk. Since the Four Nations break, we were talking about it in the last segment.
Mm-hmm.
8 games the Canucks have played. With DeBrusk on the ice, He talked about needing to introduce a little more chaos into his game today. Canucks have been outshot 33-46 in DeBrusk's minutes, outscored 1-6. With Pettersson, the numbers 31 shots for, 54 against, outscored 1-7. With Besser, 41 shots for, 47 against, 1 goal for, 5 against. That's not going to get it done. If your best players are spending their shifts in the defensive end, which these numbers suggest is happening far too regularly for Vancouver with their three most dynamic offensive forwards, and other teams are putting up a positive goal differential against you, are in fact generating positive goal differential in those minutes. If you're being outscored with your best players on the ice, you're cooked. You are cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Flat out. Compounding this, by the way, with Filip Hedl on the ice, who's at least controlling play, although, man, some of the decision-making off the rush.
Yeah, the bottom line is not there.
Canucks have been outscored 1-5 with him on the ice. So with Pettersson and Hedl on the ice, since the end of the Four Nations break, the Canucks have been outscored 2-12.
Oh, wow.
With what we might call their top six forward group. Like, you're dead in the water.
Yeah.
The fact that they're hanging around.
And by the way,
it's a miracle.
You're talking about since the Four Nations. Riccio from Canucks Central tweeted about 12 minutes ago, says it's been 28 games since Patrick Alvin told IMAC he felt Brock Besser had more to give. This is an interview with Sportsnet.ca. So 28 games since then. Besser, 28 games played, 5 goals, 9 assists, a minus 16 also in about 18 minutes of time on ice. So that's a really healthy chunk of the season, almost 30 games of very substandard production for Brock Besser. And as you said, it makes a lot of sense why they would be very frustrated with what they're getting from the player. I don't know how much that fed into or that contributed to the lack of market for him around the league. It feels like it was more just, you know, Florida, hey, got kind of Brad Marchand thrown in their lap because he wanted to go there at the last minute, right? Carolina was held up on doing stuff. It feels like maybe there was more just some random stuff that hurt the Canucks' ability to get what they wanted for Brock Besser. But the performance and the production has undeniably been underwhelming for Brock Besser for much of the year, especially since they traded JT Miller as well. And we know how much chemistry they had together and how reliable they were as an offensive duo. So I completely understand the frustration. It just now feels like a marriage that nobody's happy with, right? Like, they are frustrated with the player and wanted to sell him but weren't able to. And now it almost feels like they've become more frustrated with the player because they weren't able to sell him at the trade deadline. And I can't imagine that's a great feeling for Brock Besser either, and to hear Patrick Alvin talk about it like that. So, again, it comes back to what I was saying off the top of the show where, okay, they keep at the deadline and you want to believe, hey, it's part of this playoff push and this is what we're doing. We're betting on this team and all of that. But the behavior and the circumstances around it make it hard to buy into that. We're going to hear from Rick Tocchet in just a second here. But quickly, I mean, I know you hate the ongoing PD report, PD update. One-timer goal looks pretty good against Minnesota. Non-factor last night against Dallas. Is there anything new to say here, or is it just little glimmer of hope, revert back to form again for Pettersson?
Yeah, I'm just not doing the glimmer of hope watch, because if you need to like peel back the curtain, if you're talking about a glimmer of hope.
See, my only, I agree. Maybe this is incredibly lowering the bar, but it felt like the Minnesota game, there was more than a glimmer. Like, you didn't have to reach as much.
Well, but because of the goal and because he was looking for a shot.
Yeah.
Sure.
And he made some nice plays. He made some nice dekes and stuff. Something like he looked more assertive.
Yeah, but they didn't control play.
That's fair.
I mean, all I'm saying is, like, an acorn falls on our heads and we're like, is the sky falling with Elias Pettersson? Like, don't worry about it. Okay. When Pettersson is back, it's not going to be an acorn. It's going to be a jackhammer. Like, it's going to be something you absolutely cannot ignore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to be a glimmer of hope. It's going to be a blast of vampire killing sunlight, right? Like, this is going to be something you absolutely know when you see it. right? What does a superstar player look like in the NHL? It looks like you could have never watched the game and you could look at the ice and know exactly who the best player is. And that's what Pettersson looks like when he's at his best. If we're straining to see it, we're not seeing it. That's just it. So I think that's why I'm resentful of PD Watch, because it's just like, well, no. It won't be an argument. It won't be like, I thought, you know, because there's lots of games where I see him do things well defensively or make some nice plays, or, you know, it was great to see him make a good shot and feel good about himself, and that's part of rebuilding confidence here, but it's going to be undeniable when it clicks.
See, that's the thing, though. You're hoping it's, you keep hoping that it's building. Hey, he's building confidence, and that at least he'll stay at that same level next game. You know what I mean? And then you'll get to the breakthrough point that you're talking about, and instead it goes the other way again. All right, we're going to hear from Canucks coach Rick Tocchet. The team didn't practice today. They had an optional workout. He spoke with the media. They play Montreal tomorrow. Here is Rick Tocchet.
We didn't disrespect Brock because he didn't have a day. We've rotated the A's. Garland's worn it. Myers has worn it. Bess has worn a lot. Forbert could wear it. So we didn't disrespect an 8-year or 9-year guy here, which they're trying to cause problems. So just to let you guys know. So that's the reason why. And if you can ask Brock Besser if he feels like Rick Tocchet disrespects him.
Why did you want to get that off your chest?
Because it's just the narrative that some guys try to cause crap all the time. And, you know, we played a half-decent game last night. You know, a couple of moments, you know, I was talking to Ian about that we need some guys to do, which is, you guys all know that. And the first thing is, oh, disrespecting Brock Besser about a stupid A. So that's what you got to deal with sometimes. Makes it tough to talk to, not a lot of you guys, but some guys. So that's my, I got to get off my chest.
I didn't touch it.
No, but, you know.
Can we send you a bill for the therapy?
Yeah. No, I'm good. Okay. I'm good. I just like, you know. I like getting in scrums once in a while.
Okay. Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah. But anyway, sorry.
You were kind of heated last night. Very seldom have we seen you unload with some of your comments.
Yeah.
You still stand by what you said last night in terms of guys running ice time?
Well, it's... That's what?
I think a lot of people agree with what you said last night.
Well, it's not... It's okay, like, in the sense that it's a new day today. You know, I talked to the team today. Like, we're in a dogfight. And there's just, you know, it's a 1-1 game. And we're in the dogfight, and there's situations where you need people to have a little desperation in their game. And I'm not going to pick out guys because, you know, you're looking for desperation. And I didn't see it. So you have to go with guys that you thought you saw it. I thought guys like Hogland the last couple of weeks, you could see he's fighting thing. And we need some guys. Don't get me wrong. They're playing good hockey for me, but there's some games where we need more. I don't think it's a problem to say that.
You've talked about going to the tough areas, going to the middle of the ice. You keep on repeating it week after week. How much of that has to do with the fact of trying to maybe program guys who aren't used to doing that, and also just dealing with the personnel that you have?
Well, it's honestly, you just keep talking about it, and you practice it. You talk about it, you show it. You talk about it at breakfast. You talk at lunch and dinner. You just keep doing it. Eventually, it will, you know, it'll come to fruition, right? There was just a couple loose pucks there. I thought if we stopped on it or if we got in – I'm a big body position guy. This game's all about body position. The best players in the world, yeah, they're great, but they're body position then the puck, and I think we got to get that habit. And it's habitual, so it's on me. It's my job to get these guys to do it. And when we do it, we're a good team. And when we don't, we're – you know, then you're flipping a coin.
We haven't seen Quinn in a week's time. I'm assuming he skated today. You got back-to-backs coming. What are we looking at?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because we didn't practice today. He would have been in practice today. I don't know what jersey you had it on, in the sense that, but he's progressing, and you know he could surprise us at any time when he's ready to go. I'm not saying he's going to be in the lineup tomorrow, but it's coming. I just don't know when.
Do you still need to see him practice though, or could he?
I mean, I think at this point, I would love. Yeah, there's a lot enough games where I don't know if you can just kind of throw them in, if it's the last game of the year. I don't know, and I don't want to play the what if card. But for the good of him, I'd like to see him practice with us.
Was this a push day for him? You talked yesterday about how he'll push it, and then the next day the recovery is kind of a better marker.
There was more of a push today than the other day. Yes.
Jake's a big guy. Skates well for a big guy. He's got 22 goals. Pretty hard to knock anything he does. But I did ask him, he kind of touched on it, for a guy like that to maybe get into the corner boards, win a puck battle, and take the puck directly to the net, just to add another element to his game. Is that something you want to see from him? I mean, his down low is good. But.
Yeah. No, he's scored a lot of goals for us in front of the net. I mean, I that's one thing he does well. And I'm not saying anybody. Our team has – we got to win these battles. And, you know, we showed seven or eight today where it's a lot of positional. And we're Dallas came up with those pucks. And, you know, Dallas didn't have a lot of shots. That they had 7-18 shots. If we win, there's eight of them. I remember there were eight clear ones, and I think we lost seven of them in this situation. If we even get 500 there, that's 3-4 extra possessions, which you never know can happen. So I think we just got to play that card. You got to really understand on where you're supposed to be on battles in your position.
Jake did say he doesn't want to be standing around, you know what I mean, any longer, just waiting for something to happen. Maybe it's tough to win a board battle on the corner, but you got to get in.
Well, yeah, and, you know, like I said, sometimes you have a tough night and you got to get reminded. We all have to be reminded sometimes where you got to go to score goals. But I will say, give him a lot of credit. He's scored a lot of goals in front of the net for us.
We always talk about culture. It's a hard thing to manufacture, but with so many changes to this roster this year, do you think that's part and parcel of inconsistency and maybe not having that?
I mean, that's after the year to reflect. Yeah. I mean, we've got new guys, young guys. Obviously, some situations have hit us this year, whether it's our fault or whatever, or just bad luck. I don't know. We'll reflect at the end of the year. But, you know, we're in the thick of these things with all the stuff we've dealt with. I'm going to take the positive road because of that. But, you know, it's my job to get the best version of this team so we can get a crack at, at the playoffs.
How big is this week for you guys?
Well, we got 3 and 4. We got the back-to-back coming. And then we got, a couple of days on back. So, there are 8 points available to us. And we got some runway we got to go here. We got to get going. But like I said, we got to show it on the ice for 60 minutes. You can't give 40 minutes. And I think that's something we're trying to find in our game, the consistency you're talking about, the consistency of winning battles or the consistency of – like, we're defending the puck pretty well. I mean, you're holding these teams to 18 shots, some good teams. And we played some good teams where we're not giving them a lot, but that doesn't mean you shut it down on the other end.
You had an overtime loss in Montreal, so he scores on the play in OT, but this team didn't do anything at the deadline, so they basically said to the guys, we're going to go. Yeah. And you see how jacked up they are about playing. I mean, Suzuki and Caulfield have 131 points between them, 50 goals, first line, first power play. How much of a challenge is that tomorrow night?
Well, they're a fast team. They're young. Everybody knows where they're going. Yeah. They're a young team, and they didn't want to damage whatever they were doing with whether it's a trade there for them or not. I can't speak for them. All I know is they're a fast team. They're moving in the right direction.
Rick, is Thatcher's situation different than Quinn's in the fact that I know you've told us that he's been skating for the last week. Is he closer to getting thrown in, or are you going to need to see the same amount of practice time before you put him in?
Yeah, I don't know the exact many practices you want Thatcher to be in. I mean, obviously sometimes things are accelerated. Is it 2, 3, 4? I don't know. Somewhere in there for him to get in some – he's got to see some pucks. He's got to have people in front of him. There's got to be some game action in front of him. But if there's a guy that could go in there without as much practice time, he's one of the top goalies in the league that can do that. But it's not a recipe you want for him.
Will you be able to rely on him at any point for the rest of the way?
I think so. I do. He's sorted out a few things. He's got, for different rehab stuff, I think that he's feeling really positive. So that makes me feel good about that. Because as much as I want him to play, I want him to be healthy too.
You mentioned the two back-to-backs this week. Artie went down and played in Abbotsford. How important was that for you guys to get him into a game before potentially having to use him a couple times?
Yeah, he needs to get in some live action. I don't know what game, how we're going to sort it out, but obviously – we're in situations now. We got to win. We got to win a lot of games. So, you got to make sure that everybody's sharp.
Is it load management too, depending on tomorrow night what you do in Calgary?
I don't know. I'm trying to look at as a coach. I don't think I've ever. Maybe I have back to back, and that's a lot of whether you play Lynx or a guy like that back to back. There's a lot of factors: shot volume, stress in front of the net, all that sort of stuff. So you got to be careful because, he's he's a good goaltender, Lynx. I don't want to overrun him, but he knows the severity. And, he's the type of guy that you tell him to go in the net, he wants the net. So that's what I love about the guy.
Is there a chance you get already another start in the American League this week?
Because of schedule, I don't know in the next couple of days, but we'd have to look at that down the week. Yes, I mean, as much as possible, get him game action, 100%.
Thatcher's injury has it turned out to be this one more serious than you thought? I think initially you called it a tweak.
But. Yeah, because of the injury, sometimes they are tweaks, but then they linger on. Maybe and I didn't take the fact that it's a goalie too, and those type of injuries are a little bit longer. So yeah, and probably I was just hoping it was a tweak. I was trying to convince myself it was a tweak. So obviously I was wrong.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. He was trying to convince himself it was just a tweak for Thatcher Demko. Lots in there to chew on Demko, on Quinn Hughes, on what the team needs to do differently, and also on Brock Besser and the A-gate, letter gate with Brock Besser. We can dig into that next here. A final segment of the show coming up. Send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will dissect, chew on what Rick Tocchet had to say next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Sportsnet 650, Vancouver.
Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And you can send your texts in now. Final segment of the show here. And we just heard from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Not a full day off for the team, but they didn't skate. Sounds like they did an optional workout and some video work as well, looking at what went wrong in the game against Dallas last night as they get ready to host Montreal. And there was a lot in there from Rick Tocchet about his team. We can talk about the Brock Besser commentary, and that was actually not in response to a question. Tocchet just said he wanted to lead with that statement to kind of get that off his chest. We can dig into more into that in a second. The update on Quinn Hughes was he would have been at practice today if it was a practice. Now, Tocchet did say didn't know what jersey he would have had on. Could have been a non-contact, maybe full participant. But he also says, look, he could surprise us anytime when he's ready to go, but also would like to see him practice with us before he gets in. So I don't know if a morning skate would count as enough of a practice to get Quinn Hughes in Rick Tocchet's book. Has the opportunity to morning skate with the team tomorrow. Next opportunity will presumably be on Friday, I believe, that they'll practice because they've got the back-to-backs Tuesday and Wednesday. You would expect a day off Thursday and then an opportunity to practice on Friday. So we'll see if he's in for either of these Montreal or Calgary games this week or if he's back by the weekend. But that was the update on Quinn Hughes. And Thatcher Demko as well. A lot of chatter about that, or a lot of talk about Thatcher Demko from Rick Tocchet at the end of that availability, saying, yeah, I'm not sure how many practices I want to see him get with us, two, three, four, somewhere in there, but he's got to see some pucks. Now, he also kind of said, well, look, if there's anyone you're comfortable putting back in without a ton of practice time, it's a guy like Thatcher Demko, but you want to be careful with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't sound to me like Demko was close.
No, and in fact, it didn't sound
to me like Quinn Hughes is playing against Calgary.
No, not if he wants him to have a practice, unless the morning skate tomorrow counts as the practice.
Multiple. I'm telling you, multiple.
Yeah.
The Canucks want multiple practices before they clear guys. So I think if Hughes is going to be an option for the second leg of the back-to-back, practice in full Friday, full team morning skate on the Saturday, partly to accommodate him.
Mm-hmm.
So that he can get in a full skate unencumbered. Like, that's what we're tracking toward. If he misses practice Friday, it's going to be hard to see him go. Like, if he's, you know,
even a limited participant, it's going to be hard to see him go over the next four games.
For those, for the back-to-back set on the weekend, yeah. And then with the Demko, you know, it was because he's talking about Thatcher Demko and how many practices he needs, but it also sounded like he's given a lot of thought to how he's going to handle a Lankinen-Shelov's duo this week and didn't rule out starting Kevin Lankinen back-to-back in these games and kind of left the door open saying, well, you know, how much shot volume does he face, like action for the net.
I hate to do it.
I think he literally said, I'm not sure I've ever done it as a coach. And he's said before, like, I'm not that kind of guy. I don't like doing it. He's made it very clear it's not his first option.
But he strongly considered doing it Vegas, Utah.
Yeah. So the fact that he's entertaining it tells you how high stakes this moment is and how much more they trust Lankinen, understandably.
Coming out of the Four Nations break, he was considering doing it Vegas, Utah, then Vegas put a million shots on Lankinen and were in his grill all night. So they went to Shelov's. Shelov's performed well, which made it easy to do in LA and Anaheim to go back to Shelov's. Mm-hmm. Shelov's struggled massively in that game. And now this is your life. This is your playoff life. This is it. Calgary, you can't lose that game. You lose that game in regulation, you're hooped.
You're in trouble.
You're in real trouble.
You're in major trouble.
And Calgary doesn't play before that.
Nope. So, they've been off since Saturday.
So, I mean, you know, you could boom, boom, two games. They don't go your way. It's done. Like, honestly, it's done. Calgary would be, what, 3 points clear of you with a game in hand?
If you lose both of those games in regulation.
Yeah, that's it. You can't afford that at all. You need a split at worst.
Yep. And you know? Ideally you beat Montreal and then also beat Calgary, obviously.
But
I think the Montreal side of things is not just as important, but you really don't want to be going into that game on the back foot.
It is wild though how much the Rangers could not hang with the Blue Jackets at all. They were playing the second leg of a back to back yesterday. Like they were so many steps behind. You know, I could be racing prime Usain Bolt and I would be fewer steps behind than the Rangers were of the Columbus Blue Jackets yesterday. We saw that Ducks back-to-back performance after they flattened the Oilers.
Yep.
And it just looked like they were skating in mud the whole night. And then you saw from the Stars, like, the critical moment of that game is obviously the rebound off the CC shot that Granlund puts in for the game winner. Now, wow, the game winner was the decisive moment, Drance. What a hot take. You go into
the analysis you only get right here, folks.
You go into that third period level, the Canucks are winning that game. I'm telling you, you could tell that the Stars had no legs. And it was because the Canucks were pressing that the Stars found one mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bit of a soft turnover on an entry from Dakota Joshua that Robertson was able to pounce on, made the great defensive play, and finished it the other way. Like, that's it. That's the game. If that was level, the Canucks are winning. Like, you need, and veteran teams know this, you need the lead, and then you need to be able to expend energy preventing goals as opposed to trying to push to score them. You're pushing to come back on the second leg of a back-to-back. Like, we see guys get hurt in those situations a lot. Like, it's something I watch for a lot too. We saw it this year with Filip Hronek in that Pittsburgh game, where you fall behind 4-0 early. That was a Shelov start, and Canucks playing the second leg with back to back. Hronek kind of runs out of energy behind the net. Like, he's kind of in an odd spot because they're pressing. He's played an enormous amount of minutes. Boom. Takes a bad hit, misses 6 weeks. Like, we see that time and time again. You cannot. So that's the important thing to remember here. So you play Montreal, you need to win that game, whatever it looks like, whatever it takes. Then, that Calgary game. If you're going to win it, you need to score first, and you need to enter the third period with a lead. You enter that third period on level footing, you need luck on your side, because you're not going to have legs. That's it.
And you're going up against Dustin Wolf, an arrested Calgary team.
Well, and when was the Calgary played Saturday?
Saturday.
So the Canucks will have played two games.
Yeah.
In the time since Calgary, you're at the tail end of a three and four.
And they're coming off 3 days of rest.
Like, I'm telling you, no matter what, the Canucks can win that game. Don't get me wrong. But they're going to have less jump than Calgary.
Yeah, that's an extreme, rest gap game.
Huge advantage for the Flames.
You know, last of a 3-4, travel on a back-to-back, and they're rested. That's an extreme rest advantage for Calgary. Doesn't mean it's a write-off. As you said, you score early. And look, for all we talk about Vancouver's offensive struggles, Calgary is very limited offensively as well. So, yeah, they might have more legs, but if you're able to get up on them, that can be a really difficult situation for them as well. But I think you're right that, man, you need to find a way to get in front early and try to play your lockdown defensive game, because pressing and trying to score against Dustin Wolf in the third period there is going to be really, really difficult for the Canucks. Brock Besser and wearing a letter, wearing the A, or not wearing the A, as was the case last night. So this is interesting because Rick Tocchet, I wasn't sure if we cut off the question before the audio or not, but he actually says, or he alludes to, like, that was him leading with a statement, an opening statement, at that media availability, wanting to explain why Brock Besser was not wearing an A, was not wearing a letter for the Canucks last night. Marcus Pettersson was, Tyler Myers, Elias Pettersson, and Tocchet saying, we didn't disrespect Brock, we didn't disrespect an 8 or 9 year guy. You can ask Brock Besser if Rick Tocchet disrespects him. And basically said, look, we're rotating the A's. Marcus Pettersson, Tyler Myers, Derek Forbort could get it. Connor Garland's worn one. Besser's worn one a lot. But a pretty heated Rick Tocchet there saying, this isn't a thing. We're not disrespecting Brock Besser. And literally saying, go ask Brock Besser if he feels disrespected by Rick Tocchet. And a side of Tocchet that we haven't seen a lot in his dealings with the Vancouver media as head coach.
I like to get in scrums.
Yeah, that was good.
telling referees that's why they're not getting playoff games.
And then immediately apologize. And speaking of out of character Rick Tocchet things, yelling at the refs. You know how much he hates that.
Yeah. Well, and then what was the call late? There was sort of an iffy. I mean, there were a few iffy calls in that game. I didn't like how that game was officiated, including both ways. But the Canucks took a weird one late. The second Myers hold.
Mm.
The Myers hold on, was it Sam Steele? Man, Sam Steele's pretty good, eh? I thought he had a great game last night for the Dallas Stars. So Myers gets that holding penalty where he kind of steals the puck from him. It is a hold, but you're pretty surprised when the trailing team gets called for a play we see once a shift.
Yeah.
And so, letter of the law, whatever, but discretionary weirdness on that call, and you can see Tocchet on the bench just being like, I did this to myself. That's on me.
This is why I don't yell at the refs.
That shot of Tocchet's face just being like, yep, yeah, on that, yep, on me. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. But I also didn't like there was another bad call in that third period. Hoglander fell on a collision and they called it tripping.
Yep.
Or whatever they called it. They called it something. Maybe it was interference. I'd need to look at what the actual call was. But the truth is that there was no penalty on that play. So the Canucks, both teams got gifted, I thought, a third period power play that were both I thought were completely unnecessary. So I don't like that. I didn't like the officiating in that game, I will say.
Yeah, fair enough. What do you
it
make?
Was interference. Yeah, interference.
What do you make like of the first, the conversation around Besser not wearing a letter last night and the commentary from Rick Tocchet and the frustration from Rick Tocchet addressing it at his media availability?
I mean, it's not, they traded JT Miller. They never announced like a new leadership group. They're trying things out for size. Like, I don't know. If Besser and his camp aren't fussed about it, I'm sure they have bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
They're just, it's the kind of thing where it's like, I don't think it's inherently disrespectful to Besser. It's more just
there's no world where we're not seeing a Besser revenge tour season next year if he leaves.
Yeah, it's just, again,
I'm going to love it because Besser's such a good dude.
It feeds the perception that this is a, like, everyone wants to get divorced, but like, for some reason, there's a holdup, or you're waiting until like after your sister's wedding or something. You know what I mean?
Everyone wants to get divorced. Clip it. Send it to Mrs. Dunn.
We all want to get divorced, right, guys? Right? You know what I'm talking about. You hear me, fellas? No, but everyone in the Besser Canucks situation like kind of wants to move on, but you're not able to yet. And you're like, well, here we are. Or like, you booked a trip to a vacation with your significant other like 6 months ago, and now it's clear the relationship's not going anywhere, but you're like, ah, we can't get a refund on that trip. Like, I guess we'll just go and try to have fun in Hawaii. Like, that's what the playoffs are now for Besser and the Canucks, where you're like, well, we're here. That's what it feels like. Look, he can still resign. I get it. And there's just like a lot of like between the line stuff we're trying to read disrespect into. But again, it doesn't feel like anyone's having fun in this relationship anymore.
So I was on, I was walking home after doing the Sunday special with Dimitri and watching parts of the Columbus Blue Jackets, New York Rangers game. Okay. And I was crossing like right near the foot of the Canby Street Bridge on East 2nd. And there's like 10 seconds left on the timer for me to like cross the street. So I'm walking pretty briskly to make sure I make it. But a bus, one of those like double attached buses, takes the right.
A reticulated bus, I believe.
A reticulated bus. Okay. Takes the right. And obviously that's going to take 6 seconds for me to wait.
Sure.
Would have been nice for the bus driver to yield to a pedestrian, but also I wasn't
articulated bus.
Okay. But I wasn't
bad.
But I wasn't quite in the intersection yet. So whatever. That is what it is. So I decide, despite there being 3 seconds left for me to cross, that I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna run. So I walk briskly in. There's still time left on the thing, and some jerk in a BMW,
of course,
honks at me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I took it well?
No, I don't. Knowing you, I do not.
So I stopped walking. I checked my watch. I turned and looked at the motorist. And then I comically, you know, like dipping my hips as I like walked at snail's pace. And at this point, I'm just like standing in the middle of the road. It's definitely not my right of way anymore. And so he starts yelling at me and I start yelling back. And at this point, I realized
this is how you grow your audience, guys.
And at this point, I realized
one by one interactions like this.
And at this point, I realize he's got a woman in the car and she looks completely unimpressed. Now, maybe she was unimpressed with me, but if she's anything like my wife, she is far more madder.
Sure.
And so all of a sudden I realize, like, you think you can be a jerk to me, but this interaction will have no cost on my day. I can ruin yours, buddy.
That is the quintessential Thomas Grant experience.
Yeah, I'm not in here with you. You're in here with me, buddy. So I dragged it out. Anyway, don't honk at a pedestrian in the... First of all, don't honk at pedestrians.
My goodness.
Unless it's for safety.
Yeah, unless it's honk a really serious thing.
If you're mad at a motorist, it's one thing. But like when you honk at a pedestrian who's just minding their own business, especially when there's still time left on the crosswalk thing, you're just scaring them. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, be careful of asymmetrical situations where you have more to lose than the person you're trying to mess with.
So who has more to lose here in between the Canucks and Brock Besser?
I think the Canucks, because
I get, well, okay.
I think the Canucks, because at the end of the day, Besser's a really good player who's going to have a market.
Yeah. It just feels like they've already baked in that they're not going forward with him.
I don't think that's true. They're going to make him another offer.
That's
now,
fair.
I don't know that their offer is ever going to get to the point that I don't know why I told that story, to be honest with you.
It's like got such a thin connection. I mean, I guess you brought it back to the more to lose thing. I spent a lot of it being like, where is this going?
I love that he said the story and he's like, it has not, I'm not going to remember it, not going to have effect on my day. And then you go on sports radio and you just announce the story to the entire city.
Yeah. That guy was a jerk. Anyway. I think Besser, I think at the end of the day, the Canucks will try to keep him still. I think there will be another offer. Now, I still think the term is intractable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the valuation gap between the two camps is probably not one that's ever going to stimulate a resolution here. But I think Besser is going to do very, very well. And I think Besser is a good player. You know, I think we've seen this before, too. I think tough situations, bad situations can dramatically alter our perception, especially of like middle six wingers. And I think we're seeing that almost across the board with Canucks players. Now, there's some guys who need to be the straws that's stirring the drink more actively, like Elias Pettersson. Like, I wouldn't say Elias Pettersson's a victim of a bad situation.
No.
He's the bad situation.
Yes, he is helping to create a bad situation for guys like Brock Besser.
Correct. But the, you know, for guys like Besser, we don't expect him to drive. We expect him to finish. We expect him to, you know, help a team outscore their opposition as opposed to be the fundamental reason why they do. And if you have that shot, if you can beat set goaltenders and set NHL level goaltenders with a shot regularly, you're a special player. And Besser has that. So I think he's going to be fine. I think at the very least, the market will view him as like a younger Tyler Toffoli. And that's an appealing prospect for NHL teams seeking scoring punch in their top six. Not to mention the fact that teams like San Jose and Chicago and Anaheim, you know what I mean? Like, there's those teams, too, that will just value having good people and good NHLers in their lineup. That's what's gonna cause some of these market prices to go bonkers once we get to July 1, is Chicago being like, oh, man, we need to get three NHL players.
Well, and that was my point earlier about the trade market for Besser being distinct from the free agency market for him, right? Because there's a ton of teams that would just have no reason to trade for a rental that could very well be interested in his services. I guess I shouldn't say that it's baked in that they're moving on without him. Because you're right, they'll make another offer, but it's just, at the very least, they are extremely comfortable moving on without him. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean? They tried to trade him. By their own accounts, if they'd gotten a decent offer for him, an offer that met their asking price, they would have dealt him on the trade deadline. So there's clearly a level of comfort with saying, yeah, we like Besser a certain amount, but we also have no problem moving on. And I think you're absolutely right that it seems like Brock Besser's camp is understandably all right testing the market on free agency day and seeing what's out there for them as well. So I that's what I mean, again, where it's like, I don't think either side comes out necessarily as a massive loser from this, although the Canucks, if he walks for nothing, it's going to be a tough pill to swallow that they didn't get anything from the trade deadline. But it just seems like until the sides do, in fact, move on, there's a level of kind of awkwardness hanging about the situation, or a level of frustration, I think, from both sides hanging about the situation. Now, the easiest way to fix that is for the team to start winning and for Brock Besser to start playing better, for Brock Besser to start making an impact, scoring goals, producing, doing all of those things. That will clear up a lot of the in-the-moment frustration or awkwardness. But until that happens, it's going to be this kind of fraught situation. The whole point about the letter, and this... we've only got like 90 seconds left in the show, so this is probably a big, too big of a conversation. But I'm really just struck by, you know, Rick Tocchet spoke. How many times have we heard Rick Tocchet speak about moving your feet this year? And now today, it's, hey, we're showing video of puck battles we lost, like eight puck battles, and we lost 7 of the 8 against Dallas, and maybe that was the turning point in the game. And how, you know, you got to understand that you need those reminders. The amount of time spent on really basic things this year has been pretty surprising, especially considering the gains we thought the Canucks made in their practice habits and all that, their culture last year. And I guess in that light, I understand why they are shuffling their leadership group and looking for a new mix on the leadership group. Because obviously they're very disappointed with how this team has played and how this team has worked on a night-to-night basis this year.
Yeah, worked or not worked, right? And offensively, more often than not, it hasn't.
Well, and I just mean like work ethic-wise. Like, I get the search for new leadership solutions given the frequent lack of effort and the fact that Tocchet is having to remind them about things like, hey, guys, you got to win puck battles. You got to get inside position. You got to go to the net for rebounds. You got to move your feet. That must be very frustrating for Tocchet to have to deliver that message, considering the steps forward it looked like the team took in those areas last year. All right, that's going to do it. Man, your crosswalk story was a big hit. A big, big hit with the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will leave it there for now. The Canucks host the Montreal Canadiens tomorrow. We will be back on the air to break it all down and go into that one here on Sportsnet 650.
And some jerk in a BMW,
of course,
honks at me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I took it well?
Hey, I'm walking here! I'm walking here!